Greetings, 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 and salutations, one and all. How you doing? It's Community and Finance Night right here on the night shift to DJ Kevin Stew. I want to say big ups to each and everyone locked in right now. Those hailing from near and far. Those locked in on TuneIn Radio, welcome. Invite y'all to call a friend, tell a friend. Kicking off the broadcast tonight with the sound of Shelly Sweet Shells. Oh, a track called One Love. Can you feel the music? It's fantastic. Asking a little bit, making some adjustments. In the meantime, let me just say thank you to each and everyone locked in right now. Those on the affiliate stations. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So glad to have you. Couldn't do it without you. Those locked in on the Foundation Radio Network, ClintonLindsay.com. Welcome, welcome. Representing South Florida. Hailing out of New Jersey. Those locked in on NIE Radio. Big ups to ya. Wanna say big ups to the motivator, a brother from another mother. Those who are locked in on out of New York. An island worldwide, exhibiting the power of music. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hey, Chan and Nicole. Hey, Gary and the Jump Up production crew. Much love to you. Big ups to those out on Long Island on Reggae Pulse Radio. No, I'm no angel, love, just how you guys doing? Yeah, man, it's all about the love inside. Those locked in on YouTube Live, welcome, welcome, welcome. Oh, fantastic. The world must live in harmony. Turn the music up loud and you'll see. Go ahead and invite a friend, call a friend, tell a friend. Friends of your friends, friends of your enemies. Enemies of your friends and your enemies too. Because we're not leaving anybody out. It's the love inside me. It's all about love that is inside. Can you go ahead and share it with somebody? That love. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Oh, fantastic rhythm of the beat. Make you move your feet. Deep inside your soul. Chill, love, and take control. The rhythm of the beat. Make you move your feet. Deep inside your soul. Those on Zeno FM. Take control. One love. Welcome to ya. as about Clubhouse. Blessings to you. Bubbling in the stew pot. Y'all join in. Because tonight we're having a nice little chit chat with a man that I find to be quite interesting. But before we get into that, let me take care of some house business. I want to say thank you to my segment, Pulse Media Group, and being in a moment is priceless. Go ahead and give them a call. They take care of your videos, your photos, your streaming, your advertising. You have an event you want to stream live on a secure platform, whether yours or theirs, go ahead and give them a call. 754-999-1140. You have a church service, a wedding, a party, a graduation, a seminar, you name it. You can stream it. They have a solution for you. Tell them Kevin Stew sent you. Want to say thank you to Althea and her healing heavenly hands. Althea SU is a licensed massage therapist operating out of Broward County, North Miami-Dade, and South Palm Beach counties. She comes to you bringing her table, her oils, and over 20 years massage therapy experience. Go ahead and give her a call up. She only has one request outside of paying her. And that is that you get off her table and go sleep somewhere else when she's done. It's called the Kevin Stew Clause. Believe me, I always fall asleep. Can you feel the music? Oh, the world must live in harmony. Want to say thanks to the Global Bass. Turn the music up loud. The Global Bass has over 30 years experience in the music industry and with public relations. They do artist management and bookings. They do event planning, music production, marketing and promotions. Go ahead and give them a call, 954-804-8199. That's 954-804-8199. Or check them out online at the Global Bass, daglobalbase.com. Tell them you heard about them on a night shift with DJ Kevin Steele. Want to say thank you to McNeil Trucking. With McNeil Trucking, your goods are in good hands. They're licensed and insured movers in the state of Florida. So you want to move from the Keys up to Jacksonville. Move from Naples over to Palm Beach. From Pompano to Pensacola. And all points in between. You want to put some things in storage. You don't have the manpower. You don't have the transportation. Don't worry, you have the name, you have the number. McNeil Trucking. 954-406-9740. Call them up. Tell them Kevin Stew sent you. They have your goods in good hands. Gentleman that has one love for everyone is hanging out in the background waiting to be brought on live and in living color. Deep inside your soul, she'll love and take control. And you know, it's always a joy to talk with this guy. I have the privilege of having the opportunity to interact with him every now and then, and I've never had a bad experience. Well, not that I would admit publicly. But there's time to fix that. There's time to adjust that. So I'll give him the opportunity to give me a bad experience. You know, you give everybody an equal opportunity, right? And so he has the opportunity tonight to give me a bad experience.
A tall order.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you none other than Your Honor himself.
Good evening to all the folks on the night shift. Sounds like the night shift is everywhere I used to live. I've lived too many places. Kevin, it's just so good to be on your program here this evening, Kevin Stew.
Welcome back. It's been a while. Oh geez, all of a sudden it's gotten warm inside here. I'm even breaking a sweat. That's so strange.
I'm giving you a bad experience.
No. It's energy. It's such high energy that you bring. You know, ladies and gentlemen, it's Norman Hemming. If you've never heard the name before, believe me, you won't forget it after tonight. The Honorable. I don't even know how many titles go before your name. You know, it's Reverend Doctor Judge. Please. You know, you're gonna have to do the formalities because it's too many.
All right. Hello to everyone in the night shift. The most important thing is that I'm married to a young lady for the last it'll be 31 years soon, Carol, and I have two children. My daughter Rachel is a social media influencer, and my son Imani is an attorney here in South Florida. Born in Jamaica, grew up in New York, went to Cornell University, John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and I got my law degree from Howard Law School, have a seminary degree from Shiloh Theological Seminary in Stafford, Virginia. And I started my career in the Manhattan DA's office. Then moved on to be Regional Criminal Enforcement Counsel for the EPA for all the southern southeastern United States, and then went on to work at Maine Justice as a prosecutor at the U.S. Department of Justice in the Northeast primarily. And then after 9/11, I relocated with a family here to South Florida, serving as special counsel to the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida in the U.S. Department of Justice. Responsible for over 230 prosecutors and an equal number of support staff members here in South Florida. Presently, I serve as associate pastor of the Faith Place Church in Miramar. And every fourth Sunday, I have the distinct honor and pleasure of being with DJ Kevin Stew and speaking and delivering the word at the First Baptist Church of Sunrise here in Florida. That is my true honor and pleasure to do that.
Why? You just deliver so well, you know. That's why people are always asking you to come and host the events and speak in places and things. You're the guy. But tonight you get to take off the robe and you get to put on the gavel. Well, both robes.
Definitely.
Because, you know, a minister and a judge.
Right.
And why you're gonna have to walk us through the process. You have to walk us through the journey. And big up to your beautiful boss. I mean, your wife.
You're right the first time. You know, but it's one of the interesting things is that I've had a pretty ordinary and normal life, but I've done a number of things. So growing up in New York, I finished high school in New York at Evander Childs High School on Gun Hill Road in the Bronx. And so it's interesting because we had family members who were living in Brooklyn who wouldn't come to visit us in the Bronx because they said they were scared for their life because of where we were living, which is pretty funny, I thought, looking back at it now.
Yeah.
Right. And so we were living in a one-bedroom home that we rented, that the parents rented. At 821 East 223rd Street. And I actually, but of course, there's six children of us. And my bedroom was the floor. I slept on the floor. My chest of drawers was a garbage bag. But listen, that didn't disturb me. My mom was a housekeeper in Long Island, New York, where we have some of our viewers and listeners on the DJ Kevin Stew, the night shift, out in Long Island. She was a housekeeper in Five Towns. I don't know if you're familiar with that area
I'm
in
not.
Long Island. And so we were latchkey kids. We literally came home and let ourselves in the house and had to study and make food for ourselves
Right.
and all that. So that was the beginning in the Bronx. But in Jamaica, grew up in Pembroke Hall, that most people probably don't even know, but that's just north of Doheny Park and Patrick City, along Washington Boulevard, before you get to Marvally, if you know that area. Went to Pembroke Hall Primary and went to Jamaica College. Presently serve on the board of directors for the Alumni Association, the Old Boys Association for Jamaica College. And after graduating from Evander Childs High School in the Bronx, I went on to Cornell University and got a degree in government and public administration in tandem with John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And then I didn't have the money actually to go to law school. And my mom obviously didn't have the money. She had $300. So she gave me $300 and she says, "Go to law school, I somewhere for
Yes.
you to live." I had a scholarship that paid for the tuition and for the books, but didn't pay for any place for me to live. So I was literally homeless, right, in DC. And interesting, as my mom got by, there was someone, this young man who is an attorney, who saw me in the hallway looking at me, said, "Well, come and live with me. This is my last year. You can live with me for this year and find somewhere else." And story of my life. And then Carlton Waterhouse, who is now the deputy head of the US EPA. For the second and third dad of him, and really built a room with movable walls in his one bedroom apartment that his dad had bought for him.
Oh, wow.
And that's literally during law school for the last 2 years, and ran for years, Kevin, from the ministry. My girl, all young, she gathered all her grandchildren. She told each and every one of us what we would become in life, right? One doctor, literally, went through the whole gamut. And all of us have to watch what she promised. Of course, she said, "Judge, you're going to be a pastor." It's strange, right? How can someone
That
judge?
part, yes.
Right? But I ran from it for years. In fact, so Kevin, I was living in Georgia at the time, working as Regional Criminal Enforcement Counsel for the US EPA, doing environmental cases, helping to protect communities, especially communities of color. That had a lot of environmental devastation sometimes from the action of the government, not intentional. Like, for instance, one of the places that we worked on, which is not public knowledge, right, was Memphis Depot. Memphis Depot had all these people who looked like me living around that military base, but it's a base that's known only for having food and clothing. That's all that base does. However, the people living around the base who looked like me and looked like DJ Kevin Stew had all these heightened levels of cancer, way above the regional levels of cancer and way above the national levels of cancer in the United States. So I went there to the base with a team of hydrogeologists and geologists and folks from the CDC looking to see whether or not there was anything that the base had done. And of course, I was a young attorney at the time. They told me, "Go out and tell the folks that it's their diet that's causing them to have all these heightened levels of cancer, all these black people." So just imagine me, this fat guy, right? Goes to this town, this meeting, and tells the people living there, "Listen, the reason you have all of these cancers and you're all dying is because of what you're eating." So that the people nearly stole me out of the place.
Of
In any
course.
event, went back to Atlanta, which is where I was based at the time. And this young man called me, the old man actually, who was at the base at the time. And he said at the end of World War II, there was a train carrying chemical munitions that was leaking, started leaking, and it was diverted into the base. So what happened was they ended up emptying the chemical munitions in a hole that they dug on the base, and they put a bleach slurry in it and then covered it over with dirt. Unfortunately for the people living around there, the military didn't think it was something wicked. And I'm not saying that this was something that was intentional. The the accepted engineering practices at the time, they called it intrinsic bioremediation, which means that the earth would heal itself over time. Unfortunately, they were wrong, right? And
Right.
although it's true that over hundreds of years it could do that, in the short term, what happened is that all the people around the base were on well water. And so they were drinking all this well water every day, bathing in it. Their fruit and crops were growing it, and they were eating the food from it. And that's why they had these heightened levels of cancer. So we ended up, we being the federal government, ended up having to purchase all of these properties and relocate the homeowners. So I've always, it seems, been involved in things dealing with the community. But that gave me a careful sense, Kevin, of what it is that I need to be looking out for, not always being so naive and accepting of what everything looks like at first blush,
Right.
right? There's always something else going on sometimes, right? So that's basically how I started out after the Manhattan DA's office, which incidentally, I was at the Manhattan DA's office with John F. Kennedy Jr.,
Oh,
right? So I
really?
served there at the same time that he was there. Really nice guy. We went to lunch, on occasion. And he was really a down-to-earth person, really saddened by his the early loss of his life. Really good, a
Yes.
good person. Went on from there to do other cases and work in different areas, right? So one of the things, so forget about the legal career and the work that I did as an attorney. The things that really inspire me are one, the work that I did for Easter Seals, right? Because as you know, Kevin, there are a number of members in my own family, right, and extended family that suffer, and on my wife's side of the family as well, that suffer from a Fragile X syndrome and also from various levels of autism.
Yes.
And so it's a passion of mine to deal with and to help folks who are in that area, because of what I've seen in my own family and the heartache that that can bring and the challenges that come along with raising children who have those difficulties and even those who live to adulthood as well. So my work with them has been important. I also served until just recently on the Broward County School Board Diversity Committee, looking at making sure that in this, the sixth largest school district in the United States, that we have parity in the schools, in the lab equipment that students have here in Broward County between Black schools, white and Hispanic schools, to make sure that that we don't have classrooms that are any less for Black and Hispanic kids than they are for white brothers and sisters.
Right.
And making sure that we all have access to the same sort of things here in Broward County. So that has also been a passion of my involvement. The other thing that I was involved in coming down here, and you can interrupt me, please, is when I first came to
I just find it
Florida
very
on this.
fascinating that you're involved in all of these things in the community, but yet still have time to do your job. Please go on. Keep
Yeah,
tell
no. So the thing is that I think we all have to become involved. Because the only reason that I have accomplished the things that I've been able to accomplish, which is nothing, right, is because of other persons who have been trailblazers, who have done things before me. So I've been standing on other people's shoulders, and all of us do, right? DJ Kevin Stew is an amazing TV and radio broadcaster with the night shift, but there were people who came before you who made it possible,
Indeed.
who made inroads with the FCC to make sure that people who look like us could even be on the air, to make sure that there are formats for this type of broadcast that were established years ago before Kevin Stew was born. And
True,
so we're
true.
all legacy partners
Yes.
of things that of people who have given us before. When I first moved to Florida, one of the things that we looked at and I first got involved with was the purchase on behalf of the federal government of 276,000 acres of land to restore the natural water flow in the East Everglades. And the reason for being involved in that is that although all of us here in South Florida walk around and live as if everything is perfect, unfortunately for us, sea level is rising. All of us get our water from underground drinking water aquifers here in South Florida. And those underground drinking water aquifers were having salt water intrusion because of the fact that we had been abusive to the Everglades. Back home in Jamaica, them call it, what do call it? We call it wetlands. What do call it in Jamaica? The wetlands or the river of grass that we have. We refer to it and use
What we call it, swamp.
swamp, exactly. We use this derogatory term for it, right? But you realize that the wetlands or the swamp, as we're calling it, this is nature's way. This is how God created the earth to purify our water supply. Did you know
Yes,
that? That this
yes.
thing that we see as the swamp actually is a natural purification method for the water that all of us have to drink. So when we build on it, without having any plans for maintaining it, when we degrade it, when we introduce into it different species, flora and fauna that are not native to it, what are
Yes.
known as not native invasive species, we start degrading the integrity of that swampland or this wetlands. And so it's no longer able to purify the water that we need to drink and to be able to refill the underground aquifers so that we'll have water for generations to come, for our children and grandchildren to drink water. So
Yes.
that's one of the first things I got involved in doing when we moved here in South Florida. But then outside of that, I also got involved in a number of other organizations besides the school board. I also got involved with an organization that was aimed at and helped to create for the Department of Justice this program called the Violence Reduction Partnership. And what that is I started out by reading to children in elementary school. And so I've read with them and to help to improve in low-income neighborhoods, in Liberty City, in Overtown, and elsewhere, parts of Hollywood here in Broward County. And when I was reading with this one young man in Liberty City, the police car was going by while I was reading with him outside in the park area of a school. And he lifted up his fingers, his two fingers, and he pointed toward the police car. And he went bang, bang. And I said to him, why did you do that? And he said, because the police officers are our enemies. They're seeking, to kill us. And they're the ones who put my father in jail. So I realized at that point that there needed to be some nexus, some joining together of the community with our law enforcement so they could realize that although there are some bad law enforcement officers, that most folks who are involved in law enforcement are not involved in law enforcement to try to harm or to hurt, but are really there to protect and to serve. So I enlisted the help of the FBI. We had the Secret Service agents. We had Department of State agents. We had local police office departments all throughout South Florida starting to come into the school system and read to the kids so they could have a one-on-one, face-to-face interaction with
Yes.
these people who they thought were horrible and wicked and awful. And it also helped the police officers as well. In addition to that, this program was also aimed at re-educating police officers, putting them through specialized training to make them more sensitized to black and brown communities. And in addition to that, the program was also aimed at trying to find ways at which we don't have this school to prison pipeline. So that we looked at, before when we were kids, and you were probably perfect, Kevin, in school and the listeners here on the night shift. But when I was in school, I did bad things sometimes. Sometimes I'd roll spit balls and blow them through a straw, hit somebody in the eye. Well, if you did that in most of our major cities here in the United States, what would happen is that your little child would get charged with assault,
Yes.
felony assault, and would have a criminal record, right? And so they would start this whole spiral of going into the criminal justice system. But what we started seeing is, why don't we put in place a civil program to deal with this? Or why don't we specially train our officers who are responding to schools so the first instinct that they have is not to arrest little children, right?
Right.
What about finding other ways of resolving these things? So those are some of the things. I don't want to bore you to death with what all of that involved. Those are some of the things that we're involved in. In addition, on the church side of the house, I got very involved with First Cooper City Church of God, with a missions program and helping the missionaries around the world. So we were serving over 62 different orphanages that we had around the world, and I served on the missions committee, and we would do short-term missions trip in support of those orphanages. Some of the best memories that I have and continue to have as we go around the world is work that we did in Ascopa in the Philippines, where we had over 400 homeless children who were orphans living under a bridge in downtown Manila, in this area called Ascopa, that we provide and take care of and give them food and educational benefits. And also in this other area called Cavite, which, by the way, looks like Mandeville in Jamaica because it has all this red dirt. So it's
Oh,
the
really?
first thing my wife said, so she went there. She said, "Oh, this is Mandeville." I said, "Yeah, my wife is from Mandeville." All right. And
Yeah.
then we went also into Zambia, in this place called Mufulira, where we have over 250 orphans. However, we made a mistake in Zambia, in that the director that we hired, she had taken in one child who was technically not an orphan. The child's father was dead, but the child's mother was, although a quadriplegic, was alive. So she couldn't physically take care of the child, but she was alive. So we got in,
Right.
we got in a bit of a kerfuffle with the Zambian government, and they were right. And so we had to correct that. So we
Yes.
ended up having to remove that child from the orphanage, create a separate home for the mother and the child to live in, and we've continued to ongoing support that child and that mother separately and independently, because we should never have taken them into the orphanage. So but whether we're in Brazil or in Guatemala or in Haiti we go to, I've been multiple times to Leobon and Carrefour, doing leading medical missionary trips. Although I'm not a doctor, what I usually do on these trips, well, in especially in Haiti, is that I'm the person who cooks. Right? Literally. So I
Really?
take down these my doctors and nurses, and I ended up being the person who cooks for everybody and make sure that everybody has meals. Sometimes I'll weigh the patients before they go to see the doctors. But
Yes.
even that I stopped doing, because in Haiti, the Haitian Minister of Health said that because I don't have a medical degree, I shouldn't be doing anything to do with medicine. So even weighing children or weighing adults who are in need of free medical care, they said that that was a problem. So I just stick to my lane. I just cook. I
You just
kill the
cook.
goat, skin the goat, cook it literally. And cook other things and feed the folks while they're there on a missionary trip. It's funny, while we're in Haiti, we actually live, those garden sheds that everybody in South Florida and in New York have in a backyard where you store your lawnmower.
Yes.
That's where we sleep. That's where we sleep when we go to Haiti for those type of trips. And it's so much fun. The people are so kind and so giving. The Haitian people are some of the kindest, most generous people on the face of the earth. It's unfortunate what we see going on there now, and I agree with CARICOM that we need to get more involved in the situation. I mean, Haiti, the entire world does.
You know,
I'm sorry.
it's so interesting when you look at, if this was a picture that you were painting, all the colors that you would use, because you have done so many things, but the canvas on which it would be painted on remains constant. People and giving back to people. And so, and it really didn't matter where these people were, but one thing was common with these people was the level of attention and care that these people would get from the community and our government that they lived in or around. And so you finding these people that needed that help the most, and you've constantly been giving back and helping these people. That's amazing and
But
challenging.
it's for selfish reasons though, Kevin. Listen, when I was in the Bronx,
Please
New York,
explain.
my mom didn't earn enough money to take care of us. I used to stand online. The Reverend Dr. Amos Farkason, who is the lead pastor of First Baptist Church of Sunrise,
Yes.
he was actually our pastor when we moved to New York in the Bronx. And his church used to organize the giveaway of the free government. I don't know if you're probably not old enough, Kevin, but there was free government cheese and pork. They would give away free government cheese in this big, long, rectangular box. They would give
I
away
know about
pork in a
it.
can. They would give away all of this different free rice and all that. I used to go and stand online. My brother and sisters were embarrassed to do that. But I know that we wouldn't have enough to eat if I didn't do that. So I stood online and collected that, and also helped out with giving out to other families who were in need. So I know what it is, even though I'm so big and fat, though, I know what it is to go hungry. And I know what it is to want basic necessities. I know what it is to go for years without ever wearing a new piece of clothing, to sleep on the floor all the time, in the house in which we're living. And thank God that we had a roof over our head.
Yes.
To search through a hefty garbage bag as a dresser, try to find something clean to wear the next day. So I give back because I know what it was like when folks gave to us. I remember when we first came to the US in the Bronx, and we had no furniture at all for that little one-bedroom apartment. But somebody gave us old, decrepit furniture that they had, that they were throwing out. And so we took it and cleaned it off and used it to put in the place that we were, this rental place that we were living in. Somebody gave us a bed. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
But can someone help me? I just think I have a duty and an onus to help others who come behind me. Not that I am rich, because I'm not, but I work in the government. I serve all of you in the listening audience.
Right.
But I felt that I had a duty to give back in the same way that others gave to me. I remember going to undergraduate at Cornell for the first time, and I didn't have any clothes, literally, to carry up there, because it's much colder up in Ithaca, New York, than it was in New York City. And someone came out of the blue and said, "Here, let me take you shopping." And this is my contribution to your college career, is that I'm going to buy you some clothes, some heavy clothes to wear up in Ithaca, New York at Cornell University. So when I give back, it's for selfish reasons. It's because of what others have done for me that I'm
You
giving
know,
back.
a lot of people, I'm glad you explained it because a lot of people wouldn't have gotten it when you said it's for selfish reasons.
Right.
The common concept of being selfish, they mistake it for being self-centered and
Wow.
self-absorbed. And it's you and I have never had this discussion about this, but this is something that I talk about on this broadcast, on my Wednesday night broadcast when I do real talk, when I look at more of the psychology of how we interact with each other.
Yes.
And
Yes.
these are some of the perspectives that I take, because you have to be selfish in order to be able to give to someone else. When you're on the plane, the attendants tell you to do as part of the pre-flight instructions is to be selfish. You have to take care of yourself. That mask drop out of that ceiling, because if you pass out taking care of somebody else, then who's
That's
going to take care
right.
of you? So you
Right.
can't give from an empty cup. So you have to fill
Indeed.
up, and so that you can share.
It's what I saw my mom do out of the little that she had. And I was fortunate enough to have two moms. So I had Miss May, who really took care of me and took me under her wings, who was not my biological mother, but she was more than any mother you could expect to have. And this is what she taught me. She says, "Son, live your life with this. Do all the good you can to all the people you can for as long as
As
you
you
can.
can,
And
yes.
if you live your life with that," she says, "you're going to be wealthy and successful, not in monetary terms, but wealthy and successful in terms of the joy that you'll feel in your heart every morning when you wake up, and in terms of what you'll be able to accomplish in the amount of time that God has given you here on the face of the earth." And I took that to heart. And then my biological mother, Marjorie Hemming, what I saw her do, in terms of the little that she had, but every Sunday, and she remember she only had 2 days that she was at home, because she'd go back Sunday night or early Monday mornings to the job as a living housekeeper.
Yes.
Sunday she would make food, and she would make sure that all of these people who came to the house ate before us. And I got used to it, because it was what mommy did, because people who didn't have, right? And so she would feed them first, and then we would get what was left after. So she was a living example of what it meant to give back and to sacrifice and to be selfish, to withhold from even your own children so you can help others who are even less fortunate. Doesn't matter how horrible we think or how poor we think we were, there were people who had even less than we had. And that's what mommy was teaching us, that we should always help them and be concerned about them, you know? So that's, sorry to go off on a tangent.
Oh, no. See, what I didn't tell you at the beginning of the broadcast, is that this is really your broadcast. I'm just facilitating it. So it's all about you. The title is Behind the Robe and Gavel. I don't have a robe,
Gotcha.
nor do I have a gavel.
But
So.
listen, the exciting thing about us as a Caribbean people and this Caribbean community here throughout the United States is what we've been, and this is Caribbean Heritage Month, as you know. So I had the opportunity last night to host the unique Caribbean American Heritage Month gala in Davie at the Signature Grand. And so we were honoring South Florida politicians and titans of industry and the members of the judiciary who have all come out of the Caribbean community. And so the thing to remember, sometimes we get sidetracked, right? Because you'll hear in the news or you hear people speaking in different forum that these immigrants have never given anything to the United States. Why should we be involved with them? So it was a good program for me to get to, not only to meet and to speak with others, but also to remind people of what it is that as immigrants we have contributed. So, for instance, when people tell you go back home, what we should say to them is this, humbly though, in hum with humble respect, is that in the year 1619, the first 20 people of color, black people, this is, and I'll give you a caveat after that because we were actually here before then, right? Because they came before Columbus. But in 1619, 20 Jamaican nationals aboard a Dutch frigate came to the United States and as freed men and lived and worked here until 1629 when the first black people were brought here as slaves. So we were already here. So that's one of our contributions here. During the American War of Independence from Britain, there were people from Martinique and Dominica, as well as from Haiti. There were some 3,200 British troops who were occupying what was then the capital of Georgia, Savannah, and 3,500 French troops, which included 800 people from Dominica, from Martinique, and from Haiti, served and fought in the American Civil War of Independence. So when people say to you, you need to go back home, right? You tell them, no, I was here. My foreparents were here before you. But when they talk about the founding fathers of this country, one of the founding fathers of this country, Alexander Hamilton, who became the treasurer, he was actually born, he's a citizen of this island that was formerly known as St. Christopher, that we know today as St. Kitts, but he was from the second part of that island called Nevis or Nevis, right? That's where he was born, but came here as one of the signatories, one of the founding fathers of the United States. When we think about the state of Texas has a Jamaican imprint on it. In fact, the longest continuously operating English language newspaper, the Jamaica Gleaner, was founded by Richard de Cordoba, who was born in Spanish Town, Jamaica. He came to the United States early in his life and first went to New Orleans. But then, while he was in New Orleans, he was sending arms and money and food supplies to support Americans who were fighting against Mexico to acquire Texas. Finally, he ended up in Galveston, Texas, and then he purchased 1 million acres of land. You know that show that comes on TV, on the HGTV channel, that shows the Waco, Texas, all the redevelopment of homes there? Well, it wouldn't have existed unless it was for this Jamaican who bought 1 million acres of land and created the city of Waco. In downtown Houston, today, when you go there today, you go to the city hall, you will see a plaque dedicated to this Jamaican. In fact, at the state house in Texas, it says the state of Texas would not have become a state had it not been for this Jamaican national. So when people tell you you're an immigrant, go back to where you come from, you should remind them of all the things that you have done and contributed. And then even coming into more recent times, right? Just think about the time that we're living in, right? But when we have someone like Susan Rice, who I know she served in the Biden administration, but before she served in the Biden administration, this Jamaican national, right? She served in the Obama administration as the head of the National Security Council, the highest ranking national security position in the United States. She, this was the person, this is Jamaican national heading this up. We had this Jamaican national, Colin Powell, as the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, and then Secretary of State. When we turn on our TVs at night, and I know you have your own program here, Kevin, but if you turn on NBC News at night, Lester Holt is a Jamaican descendant whose mother and father both come out of Mandeville, where my wife is from, in Manchester, Jamaica. But when we see, what's your favorite weatherman on NBC? Al Roker.
Al Roker.
When you see Al Roker, although he was born physically in the Bahamas, which is also Caribbean, by the way, Al Roker's parents were Jamaican. So when people tell you to go back home, go back to where you come from, he said, no, we're an integral part of these United States. When you think about the vice president of the greatest country on the face of the earth, right, Kamala Harris, right? This is Jamaican heritage. Listen,
Yes.
and Indian. So when they tell you go back to where you come from, say, no, I can't go back to where I come from because I played an integral role, my forefathers played an integral role in here. So respectfully, although I know you have your own position, I love this country as much as you do, and I've sacrificed, and we have historically sacrificed so much on behalf of this nation. I don't know if it was last week, the time is running together for me here now, where the former president was arraigned in downtown
Yes.
Miami.
Yeah.
And it might have gone over people's head that the courthouse that he was driven into and in which he was arraigned, the name of the courthouse is the Wilkie D. Ferguson Courthouse. People are thinking, oh, that's a nice name. You know who Wilkie D. Ferguson was?
No.
He's from the Bahamas. He's the first black U.S. district court judge appointed in Florida. And that's why the courthouse is named after him. So he was, the former president was actually arraigned in a courthouse that's named after a fellow Caribbean national. It's all these, but we don't know, we don't understand, we don't know our history,
no.
And we don't try to know our history. So we think we don't belong here either.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Especially, and this is going to be very controversial. I hope you don't lose any viewership over this.
Listen,
but
it's all controversy here.
Okay, I hear even some DJ Kevin, I hear, and folks out in the night shift audience, I hear some people saying, I am offended when they call me an African American. Well, I say, well, hold on, let's wait a minute, let's look at it logically, right? So the Americas stretches from all the way in Alaska through Canada, all the way down to Chile at the southernmost point.
Mm-hmm.
But the Americas also, look at your map. It includes the archipelago that begins at the tip of Florida and that goes all the way down to Guyana in South America. Mm-hmm. In fact, this is all the Americas. So when
Yes.
someone says to you, you know, don't call me an African American, I'm Jamaican. Yes, I'm a proud Jamaican, right? But you are a part of the Americas.
Yes.
In fact, Jamaica is a part of the Organization of American States. You ever wonder why that is? Because we live on
in the
Americas.
Yes.
So it's hilarious. I love to hear these conversations. And I get it. You want to be proud of where you're from. And I am proud of where I'm from. But don't negate the fact that you are also an African-American, right? You're an African living here in the Americas. So it's quite interesting to me about those things. But when you think about the first person of color to run for the presidency of the United States, Shirley Chisholm,
mm-hmm.
right? This is someone who's from the Caribbean, right? We have had so much, and I know it's just, I'm just doing a surface thing. We've had so much contributions to this country in terms of the political sphere, in terms of the military sphere, in terms of the State Department, in terms of religion.
Yes.
Minister Louis Farrakhan, I know he's controversial once again, and I won't say anything too much about him because I know you need your audience, right? But Minister Louis Farrakhan, Jamaican parents, right? One of his, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, he tells you he's from Jamaica, right? Malcolm X tells you that he's of Caribbean parentage. Every person who has had any significant impact in the United States, except people are going to say, well, what about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King? You're right. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was born here in the United States. But do you know where he went for his refreshing? And he says it in his books. He says, I always went to Jamaica. That's where I felt most safe. That's where I felt inspired. And that's where I went to feel rejuvenated. Listen, you have nothing to be ashamed as
yes.
people of a Caribbean descent and people who are from the Caribbean or people from anywhere in the diaspora or anywhere in the world as immigrants of the United States, because we've all played this amazing revolutionary role in making this country the great country that it is.
Yeah,
today.
But you see,
let me get off my soapbox.
Wait,
go
you
ahead,
see,
Kevin.
No. It's fine. It's fine because it even expands over to... As you like to incorporate the young people when you deliver a message, hip hop and rap music,
Cool Herc.
It's coming out of Jamaica. Last night on the BET Awards,
yes,
Busta
yes.
Rhymes got the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Jamaican.
Jamaican, and. He did a little set and incorporated the Jamaican music, the dancehall music, in it with dancehall artists.
Course.
So it is something that we often overlook. We, somehow we have a tendency to one to focus on crumbs when we can have a whole cookie and not realize the part, the role that we play in creating this massive cookie. But we're focusing on crumbs and we're holding on to the crumbs. And this is what is driving us. Why? Because for lack of knowledge.
Yes, for lack of knowledge. So, you know what every Caribbean parent says to them, right? So the heights of great men and women reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, kept toiling upwards in the night. Part of that toiling has to do with work, right? Physical work.
Yes.
But it also has to do with knowing and studying your history and understanding who you are, but also, right, so historically, who are you, what did you accomplish, but also understanding whose you are, right? So don't be ashamed of being a Christian. So one of the things that I love to do is when I do the expository work on the Bible is I like to let people know where they are in the Bible and explain to them, this is talking about you, people who look like me.
Right.
So when, if I see something in the Bible that's talking about Ukrainians, right, which it actually does, interestingly, in the New Testament, right, or I'll point that out. If it's talking about someone like the king of, like Artaxerxes, whose kingdom stretched from East Africa all the way over to the westernmost portion of India, it includes all of these people from these black and brown peoples from that entire region of the world. Because sometimes we lose sight of it when we read the Bible and we see these names in there. We don't realize that it's us that it's talking about. So we have a lack of understanding of who we are. And some of us define our origin, Kevin, and members of the Night Shift, the viewership and the listeners. We define ourselves thinking that our history started in slavery. Yes. As if somehow that's where we started. So we know nothing about the Moors, right? So you know, the Moors actually controlled much of Europe. And the Moors were Africans. Many of them were Muslims. I get it, I know, right? But they were Africans who actually went and they, before European slavery started, they were in control of Andalusia in Spain. They were in control of the majority of Great Britain. That's why the national dance of Britain today is called the Morris, because it's named for the Moors, literally the blacks. It's the reason why you have a place in France today that's called Le Petit Afrique. It's called the Little Africa, because you controlled it, black people, hundreds of years before European slavery.
Yes.
And it's interesting. It's also the reason why in Spain today, and in Central and South America, you have these Catholic cathedrals that are called, I'm losing my memory now with respect to the name. Oh, it's called Matamoros Cathedral. Matamoros means kill the blacks cathedral. That's literally what it means. So we go in and we take these pictures on the outside. Take a snapshot, take a selfie on the outside here. I wouldn't even know what it means. It means kill the black. It means kill the black because you were in control of Spain. And so when they rose up, these Europeans rose up to overthrow us, right, and our rule of their European kingdoms is by then. It's the reason why someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger, his name literally means black plowshare, right, because of the control that Africans had of portions of what is today Germany. It's the reason why the Russian language was reduced to writing by an African. So when you hear over the weekend about Prigozhin and marching towards Moscow and Putin saying that this is a rebellion against him, we sometimes lose sight of the fact that the very language in which they're speaking is a language that was reduced to writing by a black person. By you, people who look like DJ Kevin Stewart, who look like me, right? Because we don't study our history, so we have no concept. We think this is all foreign and all strange and all weird to us, right? So when we read in our Bible and we hear, well, God created the heavens and the earth, the earth was all form and void, and he created Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Well, we don't have to guess about where that is. It's in Olduvai Gorge in Africa, right? At the beginning of the white and the blue Nile. And in fact, we have the remains of Lucy to prove that everyone on the face of the earth has devolved or came out of out of African parents, right? So it's kind of funny. I guess we're all African, right?
Yes.
Whether you're European or you're Chinese or you're Indian. just an African.
But even the whole...
Doesn't mean we're better. Let's be careful. Doesn't mean that you're better than them.
No.
It just means that we're all equal. Sorry.
Exactly.
Sorry.
That. Right. And I a few... I'd think about two, three years ago, I did a broadcast focusing on where Negro came from and where Caucasian came from. I did two broadcasts on it.
Interesting. Yes.
And even the word Caucasian...
Yes.
You know, and the mindset behind it, thinking that because of the brain power, the intellectual capacity of individuals based on their skin color and things like that, it's ridiculous. But it became a standard because of those that were telling the story.
Yes. Listen, the name Caucasian coming out of the Caucasoid Mountains. In that part of Eastern Europe, but race though is a social construct.
It is.
This is not something that our ancestors would have even been able to understand the concept of this whole race thing. What are you talking about blacks or whites or they're like what are you exactly? This is a social construct. In fact, everything in the society came together to try to make the point that there was some difference between people who were black and people who were white. In fact, some of the studies that were done in the United States and even in Europe said that blacks had these smaller brains. So what they would do as a result, because this is what people at the university levels were seeing, not to mention the fact that all of them came to Africa to study, right? In fact, the Greeks tell us that they studied in Africa. In fact, every physician today pledges the Hippocratic Oath. Well, the Hippocratic Oath is what the Greeks called Asclepius. Right? What the Egyptians call, who the Egyptians called Imhotep, right? Mm-hmm. So every doctor on the face of the earth pledges this oath to this person who is actually an African. Right? And the Greeks say that they studied there. But it's hilarious,
Africans,
right?
Yes.
But we don't see ourselves as being these smart, ingenious people who are good at math and good at science. But in any event, putting all of that aside, because we don't know our history, folks were able to tell us at the university level that our brains were smaller. And so physicians and scientists started doing these horrific experiments on black slave babies where they would drill into their skulls, right, to look at their brains and without anesthesia, because they said they are not really human and they can't feel the pain in the same way that we do. But, and you might say, well, that's just historical, Norman. That doesn't affect us today, but it does, because all the studies right down to 2023 shows that black males and females going into the hospital with allegations of pain are less likely to get pain medication effective from their doctors, because they still have that mindset going back to hundreds of years ago that we don't feel pain at the same level as whites and Asians and Hispanics feel pain.
Yes.
So that's why we have to correct history. That's why we have to learn our history and understand who we are. I know earlier I said to you, in 1619, when the first 20 Jamaicans came to the United States. But the reason I said that wasn't the first blacks here is because you know the book, they came before Columbus, right?
And the silk trade was way before Columbus. And the silk trade happened out of Africa, coming up the Mississippi River, going as far as you can travel by ship.
Interesting, right? So we're even here before then. It's why when they found these Ptolemaic heads down in Mexico, right? And they said, oh, they must have been built, they must have been carved by aliens. It's just black men. It's clear that it's just black. They're huge, oversized stone heads
because of
black people with broad noses.
Exactly. And it's because it is easier to sell the story that it came from aliens than to say people who are considered of a lower standard, a lower class, could do this. They still haven't figured out the pyramids.
Of course, well, that's the thing. So we walk around today and we walk to New York City, and I love New York City. I love Beijing. I love Moscow. I love all of these great cities with these tall skyscrapers. But do you realize that these skyscrapers are dwarfed in comparison to the Great Pyramid of Giza? And this was built thousands of
They
years
don't.
before the technology existed to build these skyscrapers. That the Great Wall of Zimbabwe, that rival of these skyscrapers, was built by people not in in the northern portions of Africa where Egypt is, although the Egyptians said that they came from down south, right? Which mean that they came from that era that in which there's fighting today in Sudan and Somalia and in Ethiopia and Eritrea. But below the desert in Florida, in Africa,
Africa.
there were these people who were building the Great Zimbabwe Wall, these large towering ziggurats and structures that the whole no notion of when we go to Washington, D.C. and we see the Washington Monument and we are enthralled by it, and we don't understand that this actually is an African obelisk that's found all throughout the continent of Africa and all of the different 54 nations. 54, yeah, 54 now that make up the continent of Africa, right? That this is something that comes out of the story of Horus and Osiris and gods that were being worshipped there. And that's the reason for the obelisk is actually a phallic symbol. But in any event, but
Yes.
we don't know our history, so we don't know who we are, and we don't even know when we see ourselves in things in modern European cities or American cities. We don't even know that it's really the story of us because we fail to study
Indeed.
our own history,
Yes.
right? But we
Yes.
have to make it fun for the young people. And it seems like this generation, they seem to know a lot more than my generation and probably even more than your generation,
Well,
DJ
the
Kibbs.
information is more readily available. It's
Ah,
at your
yes.
fingertips. The thing
Right.
is to get them to find it, to get them to look for it, to get them to
Right.
listen to it and soak it in, to get them to ask the questions. Because
Yes,
this thing too is what is missing. People don't want to ask the difficult question because it goes against the grain. You know,
right.
to question the pastor that delivered the message to say, but
Wow.
why would you say that? What's the idea? What's the thought process behind
Yes.
this? No,
Yeah. So
we don't do
The
it.
onus has to be, and the church is expected to do a lot, but the onus is in part on the church, right? So we as parents, we have our own responsibility to make sure that we educate our children about these matters, and we make sure that they get the best, most balanced education that they can get, despite whatever the laws are in Florida or elsewhere regarding what their children are able to study. But then also, as a community of adults, we also have to make sure that we continue the tradition of the griots. Right, just these people who recount our history for us, this oral history and also the written history, but that we tell it in such a way that our young people will want to hear it. And this is what the rappers do in a way that many of us are unable to do. And so when you have rappers who are enlightened and who teach our children in their songs, right, and this whole Afrobeats movement that we see happening now, where and not all of it is great, right, but a lot of it, right, that started by people like Kool Herc and Grandmaster Flash is really about teaching our people about who we are as a people and our history. Some of
Yes.
it is a bit raunchy, whatever, right? But we need to do that. But then the church has a responsibility. So we should be hearing from our pulpits stories and sermons about where we appear in the Bible, what
Right.
influence we have had, how does this religion, how does this really relate to us, right? Is this really our religion? Right? And so when we start to ask those questions, our pastors should be in a position to answer, to help us to grow as a society, so that we'll feel comfortable not only as citizens because of what we've contributed historically, but we'll feel comfortable socially because of what we continue to offer to this country today. We'll feel comfortable theologically because we'll understand that this is also us. Every era of our life
Yes.
is wrapped up in who we are and whose we are. And we are a great, a mighty, and a wonderful people, and we're equal to every other race, ethnic group, and nationality on the face of the earth.
You know, yesterday I heard you say something that kind of triggered my moving up of the invitation for you to be on the broadcast, and it is relating to being a gangster.
Wow. Yes.
And early in my 20s, I grew up going to church in the Salvation Army and playing music. So music camps, I get to say the phrase this one time at band camp, I get to literally say that phrase, you know, in telling a story. But one of the things at one of these camps that I was at,
yes,
there was an elective that the title of it was Jesus Was a Party Animal.
Wow, interesting.
And when you really think about it, as you go through stories of the Bible, he was always at the best parties and bringing the liquor. I'm not making
that
it up.
Story of him changing water into wine. Yes.
Exactly. But he was always at the best parties. And yesterday you mentioned OGs, original gangsters.
Yeah.
And the you broke it down, the whole what a gangster is. Now, because I don't know how many people from church actually listen to my broadcast. I don't know. But could you break it down for the rest of the world for me, please? Oh, I didn't big up one section of my listening audience. Those over there in the UK. Top of the morning to you guys over there on One Harmony Radio. Up in the UK, King Genius, Queen Genius, much love to you. I do apologize for leaving you out in the earlier introduction, but much love every time to you guys in the UK. Gangster.
Yeah, and it's, especially, but I mean, when you think about the gangsters, I guess the original gangsters in the UK would have been the Windrush generation, right?
Yeah.
And what they were able to accomplish, despite the fact that the British government systematically made sure that children of Caribbean parents and Jamaican parents in particular were sent to schools for people with disabilities and not placed in the regular school system. Mm-hmm. We were sidelined from our children growing up and being born there. But these folks were the original gangsters because in Great Britain, at least, but we found that the parents came together, even though many of them didn't have a high formal education, but they came together and they actually created their own schools all throughout Leeds and Yorkshire, in London and elsewhere in England, where they settled to educate their children in the appropriate fashion when they realized what was going on. When Caribbean psychologists and psychiatrists started to tell them what was happening in the schools, as well as kind and caring whites in Great Britain did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole notion of original gangster, the word, and we've all been educated because of the British dominance of the various countries that we've come from in the English language, and so gangster is actually an English word, and the meaning of the word gangster is a group of people heading in one direction or to one place, and another definition of it is people who know the way and are going in that way. And it's interesting because Christians were originally known, I know it says they were first called Christians at Antioch, but when they were called Christians at Antioch, what they referred to themselves as was they said, we are people of the way. So, so it means that the Christians are OGs, they're the original gangsters, right? Literally just using the English language.
Yes.
It's not my language, it's the language that was given to me. I was probably speaking Ashanti back on the motherland. But this is their language that they've given to me. So their language tells me that these Christians were the original gangsters, right? And that therefore this Jesus and their followers of the way was Christ, that the original, the OG must have been Jesus himself, right? So everyone today who is following Christ, you're following the original gangster. And it appears that he was, as DJ Kevin Sue so astutely broke down for us today, because he hung out not with the rich and the wealthy. Not that there's anything wrong with them. They also have the opportunity to go to heaven, right? Because his God's will is that none should perish, but all should come to eternal life. But the people that Christ hung out with, they were the least and the disaffected in the society, right? There were those in the society who were poor, who were prostitutes, those who were taxmen, those who were usurious in how they loaned money to the poor. It was the people who were doing, who were thieves and robbers, right? These are the people that he hung around because he wanted to bring them to a different level. He wanted to change them from this gangster way of the world to become true gangsters for heaven, right? And literally, that's what he created. So from 12 men, he was able to create 12 gangsters who were able to go out throughout the earth and to win billions of people to Christendom today in 2023, so that we serve Christ today because of these OGs, these original Afro-Asiatic men who Christ put together to spread the gospel of the good news to the entire world.
But look how it is today, how you hear of a gang and immediately the thought is something negative.
Yes, no, I understand. The thing is that because the gangs should be more focused on Christ, right? So this is the issue with gangs, right? So gangs can be good and they can be bad, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason that our young people gravitate, and our generation and generations before us gravitated towards gangs, is because it gave them a sense of family.
Belonging, yes.
It gave them a sense of belonging. It gave them a sense that somebody cared about them and somebody had their back.
Mm-hmm.
These are the things that the church should be doing today. The church should be the place that is a family. In fact, the scripture said they had all things in common. So no one was without lack. That's why I believe as church members, and that's why I get involved in the missionary work here locally, but also internationally, mm-hmm. of giving to those people who are in need, right? Because that's one of the major roles of the church, is to provide for those who are poor. But also the church should be a place not only that provides for the needs of the poor, because we feel that folks are family, we should be treating people like family. So when we go to church, we don't go to a black church or a white church or to an Asian church or a Korean church. We go to church because when we get to heaven, there's not going to be a black section of heaven or a white section of heaven or a Hispanic section of heaven. It's just going to be heaven. We're not going to be divided into ghettos, right? So we better get used to dealing with our brothers and sisters now and relating to everyone as family. But then also the church has to be a change agent in society, right? So the church has to be involved in making sure that we educate our people in terms of what their history is, but we educate our people, regardless of the racial or ethnic background, in terms of what is the right thing, what's the right and righteous thing that we should be involved in.
Right.
So the church needs to be at the forefront of any justice movements, right? So when someone is like a George Floyd, is killed like a dog in the streets, mm-hmm. the church should be at the forefront leading, saying, no, this is not what Christians, this is not what family does, right? And being at the forefront of changing those things. So we need to be the original gangster.
You mentioned George Floyd.
Yes.
One of the things I tend to address, I address three main things. Mm-hmm. Wrongful incarceration, mental health, human trafficking. Three main things that I will address at any given time. And looking at you mentioned George Floyd, and we know the whole controversy behind that. There is a young man today who is doing time in Alabama. Lakeith Smith is his name.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And this young man was given 66 years for him for felony murder.
Mm-hmm.
Neither him nor his friends who broke into this abandoned building.
Wow.
That they were caught, the cops were calling them on. One of them, a cop shot in his back while running away.
Wow.
And Lakeith is doing 66 years, which was reduced to 55 years,
right,
or 56 years. And I don't know if that's any reduction of a sentence, but he is doing that time for his friend's death. The cop was in charge for murder. And so this is a law that is in the books, on the books in Alabama, which is crazy to those who listen to it on the surface. Whomever it was that was argued and put into place, understand that, again, we, the body, can be a change agent.
Yes.
And
yes,
the body of people being, once we have a common direction to go in, it is to band together and to do it effectively. And it doesn't mean to do it violently.
Yes.
And so to let your voice be heard and to speak up and speak out, to know, to learn the real history behind what it is that you're standing up for when you're standing up for something, not just because it has become popular.
Of course, of course.
And
so
go
what
ahead.
I could say to that DJ Kevin and to the night shift audience is, one, full disclosure, so I've spent most of my life in law enforcement.
Yes.
And in fact, today I serve as chaplain for the Federal Bureau of Investigations, right? And I don't know much about this particular case, but this is what I can say about this. The reason for laws like that had to do with cases in which, let's say, for instance, there were three guys who went to rob a bank. Two of them went into the bank to rob the bank. The other guy sat outside in the car as a getaway driver.
Right.
When they went to rob the bank, the guard inside the bank pulled his gun to fire at them. So they fired and they killed him and they killed the manager of the bank. They got the money, ran out to the car, and the guy drove the car away. The other two are shot and killed, but the driver of the car was caught. He never fired a gun, right? He never went in and robbed the people. All he did was to drive the getaway car. Well, the law was aimed at making sure that he would get the maximum penalty for the crimes committed by the persons that he was involved in a conspiracy with to rob the bank. That's the purpose of the law. However, one of the things that we have to understand about how policing agencies were started in the United States of America is that they were started as organs to recover runaway slaves.
That part.
Right? And so many, many of our law enforcement organizations, it's just the truth, right?
Yes,
and that's
it is.
To be outrageous. It's just the truth of how they were founded, right? This is what these law enforcement agencies, these sheriff's offices, and these local law enforcement departments were founded to do, to track down, to hunt for runaway slaves. So where the slave master was, like in the case of Jamaica, slave masters raped Jamaican women who were brought as slaves there so often and so early that most of our women in Jamaica didn't survive past the age of 12 because they were being raped at younger than age 12 by the slave master when they were brought off the slave ships. But and although there were slave masters here in the U.S. doing the same thing with underage girls, the law was on the side of going after slaves, the oppressed who were running away. So that it's very confusing and strange and weird and wicked is what it was. So we have to understand the genesis of these law enforcement departments. But understanding that there are reasons behind some of the laws, right, that make sense. But some of the things that we do, and some of the way that we have mass incarcerated. So we have, 2.5% approximately of the world's population here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But we have the greatest prison population of black and brown people of anywhere on the face of the earth. The largest prison population of any country on the face of the earth. It's crazy to think of that. But it's all a vestige of how these law enforcement organizations started out. So yes, you're correct, DJ Kevin. And the night shift audience, that we have to start working to make sure that we bring attention to individual cases, but also for the reform of the entire justice system. So it becomes more egalitarian and more fair. So we don't have people who look like me being put away. I remember when I was serving in the Manhattan DA's office, and I would be driving home on two occasions while I was there. I was pulled over by the same New York City cops that I was working with to prosecute cases, right? They pulled me over twice. And both times they pulled me over in my car, and I'm dressed in a suit. They would say, get out of the car, face down on the ground. And I'm face down on the ground in a suit. They'll go through my pockets. They'll pull out my badge showing that I'm an assistant district attorney. Oh, my bad. We're so sorry. We were looking for someone who fit your description.
Fit the description.
Right? So I get it. It's horrible and it's terrible. That's why we need change. That's why we need to bring about change, right?
Yes.
In a peaceful way. Here. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And you know, it's not to say don't be angry.
Right.
Yes.
Oh,
it's an emotion. Feel that emotion. Embrace it. Don't bottle it up. Let it out.
Yes.
But do it constructively.
Yes.
And that requires a bit of restraint. It requires a bit of composure.
Yes.
But it can be
done. Definitely.
And collectively, we people of color, the disenfranchised, have the strongest combined voice that there is. The problem is combining that voice.
Wow. Wow.
And I
Yeah.
try to share a thought each time and leave someone somewhere with a thought of how can I do better to make my voice louder, to make it more effective. And it doesn't even have to
Yeah.
be audibly louder for it to be
Wow.
effective.
Yeah, but well, your program is Community and Finance Night. But well, it's interesting. A number of years ago, a study was done that showed that the spending power of Black people in the United States alone,
Yes.
if we were a separate country, would be the ninth richest country on the face of the earth. One of the ways in which the Black and brown people, right, and that's just for Black people. So just imagine you joined with all people of color and said, we're going to spend our money in such a way that we're going to be making a statement, a bold statement about righteousness and justice to this nation. Trust me, you would see things changing. But it's to get us all to think in one mind and to speak with one voice and to realize that, we might have come over in different ships, but we're all in the same boat right now. And so we need to work and act together to bring about justice. Things have changed and things have improved since we first came to the West. But there's still a lot longer way for us to go, whether we're in England or whether we're here or anywhere else in the diaspora. There's a lot more that we can do to change our circumstances.
You have, on a side note, but related, behind you, over your shoulder,
Yes.
is this
Yes.
really interesting picture. And it looks like St. George.
Yes.
And well, I would to
It's
catch my eye as a George's old boy, to catch my eye.
got
So
you.
tell and I
It's
know you don't do things without a meaning behind it.
right. So it's the reason that I have that picture so prominently displayed in my office, and when I do hearings even from my home, that's the picture that people hang me. But it's actually the picture of the Bob Marley Uprising album, right? So I actually had someone paint this picture for me while I was in school. I'd had the least amount of money available, but I paid this artist in DC to paint this picture for me because it has such resonance with me, right? In terms of what I was going through at the time and what all of us as a people are collectively going through in the United States as Black and brown peoples, because it shows. It's a picture that Bob Marley had on the cover of his album, indicating what this Buffalo soldier was like. But there wasn't seen as this meek and mild-mannered person who walked around, saying, "Yes, master, yes, sir." But he was someone who was seated on a white horse, this triumphant beast of victory. And he had his head raised high, and he had the spear in his hand, and he was saying, "We're not going to take it anymore. We're going to bring about change. We're going to make a difference. That I know who I am. I'm not just a slave, right? I was someone great. I was a king, and we were kings and queens before then." And so that's why I have that picture there to remind me every single day of who I am, but also whose I am. But the cross of St. George is because of this whose I am bit, is that not only am I great and came from kings and queens, but that ultimately whose I am is more important, the cross of St. George, because I am God's child. Whether I'm a man or a woman, regardless if I'm white or Black or what race or ethnic group or country that I'm coming from, that's ultimately who I am and whose I am are the important things. And for all of us, whose we are is that we are these children of God. Right? If we're a part of the family,
Yes,
right?
yes.
Right.
You know, I didn't even remember at the beginning of the broadcast to tell people that they could have called in and said hi to you and ask you a question or
Wow.
whatever. But listen, people, I can't, I don't, I won't say I promise you because I don't make promises. I give you my word. Norman will be back.
Thank you.
It has taken about 3 years to bring you back since the first time,
Right,
but
right, right.
you know, you've been busy. You've
Right.
been very busy, and you continue to be busy. And you know, there are people that do busy work, and there are people that do work and be busy.
Right.
two different things. You're doing the work, which keeps you busy, but yet still you find the time. You find the time for your family. You find the time for yourself,
yes,
which is also important.
Yes.
And I've read some reviews, individuals that have been before you in legal cases.
Yes.
And saying how they were nervous. Some are saying, you know, I've never had a situation like this where I had to be before a judge before. And you know, but Judge Norman Hemming made me feel so comfortable. And although I may not have won my case, I felt good coming out of it that I was heard.
Wow.
And I say to you, kudos. Because
you
remembered where you were coming from. And you remembered who you are. So it helped with your direction, where you wanted to go, and those that you wanted to take along with you, whether directly or indirectly. And I tip my hat to you for that all the time. Every time I hear you talk, every time I even see you, you don't even have to talk. Just seeing you, being in your presence, it's that warmth that you have around you and about you. And you know, I wouldn't want you to change for the world. And for those who have never had the experience of being around Norman Hemming, you know, just I didn't use any of the titles that you have, because that's not who you are.
No, definitely not. Right. It's what I do for a living.
Exactly.
Right.
You are Norman Hemming. That's who you are. And that helps
the night shift audience and you are what's, you are the folks that are amazing. Because every night you're on the air, and every night people listen, and every night people are involved, you know, and everyone doesn't get a chance to come on the program and to talk about the things that they're doing. Mm. But there are all of these unsung heroes out there in your audience, you know, Kevin, that are doing amazing and remarkable things. So we just have to give them a hand clap of praise and thank
God
for them.
Indeed. I try to give them the opportunity to come out, though, you know. Don't get it twisted. Yes. I do give them... Ginger Lerner Wren.
Oh.
I would suspect that you're familiar with her. America's very first mental health court judge. She has been on this platform more than once. And
excellent.
We met on the stage for NAMI's annual fundraising event, NAMI Walks.
Yes, yes, yes.
And for the past 3 years, I've been the host of NAMI Walks.
Nice.
And we met there, and since we met there, we formed this bond. And so she is one of these unsung heroes that you would speak of, and I could name others, those who have been incarcerated and have been released, their names cleared because it was a wrongful incarceration. This man out of Houston, Texas, by the name of Richard Miles, runs an organization called Miles of Freedom.
Mm, indeed.
You know, there are so many.
Yes.
And we just don't know.
Yeah.
And sometimes we hear of them, and because they're not being lauded by whatever social media platform and whichever influencer is out there doing it, then we think nothing of it. Pay attention to the stories that these people tell.
Yes.
And realize where it is that they have come from and what it is that they have gone through, and connect it to self, because it is no different from our journey.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And so I try to give an opportunity for that to be heard.
Awesome.
And
thank
you. That's my little bit. That's just this here, the night shift with DJ Kevin Stew. That's just my little bit, my little way of giving that opportunity. And letting people like you, who would rather just sit in the wings and do your little bit, cook your little food and share and feed whomever you can, while you kick it in a corner on the floor.
Yes, yes. But listen, DJ Kevin Stew, if you weren't there, to give a worldwide audience exposure to some of the issues that you expose the audience to. They would never hear about some of the things. So we have to applaud you, and we're grateful to you and for the entire Night Shift audience, for continuing to support you and all of your sponsors. We're just grateful to each and every one of them, and to you, but to you most importantly, for your tireless efforts throughout the years to promote everything that's good and righteous and that's just.
I
Thank you.
try. Thank you. Thank you. I try. Norman, what else are you involved with in the coming up months that you'd want people to get on board with as we
Right.
close out this
Right.
session, this
So,
Norman Hemming session?
all right. No. So one of the exciting things that I'm most excited about is I'm going to get a chance to serve as the officiating for the Jamaica Independence Anniversary service here in Florida. So I would encourage people to log on live for that, or to come out for the venue. The venue, it has not been identified yet, but usually it's at the Faith Church here in South Florida. And we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to a wonderful, spiritual, exciting, celebratory time as we celebrate Jamaica's independence going back to August of 1962. Also have an opportunity coming up later in the year to host the Clarendon College Old Students Association Grand Gala Banquet, and encourage people to do that. And then also later in the year, we have another event coming up involving the Golden Crust Foundation and the work that they're doing to help the business society and the new founder of the Golden Crust Enterprise. There are a number of things coming up throughout the year. Too many. Let me, because I'm forgetting some of them, that I might get in trouble for people saying, you didn't remember you're hosting this for us and you didn't say anything about it.
Yeah,
All
yeah.
right, so let me be quiet.
But
But yeah, come.
it's because of your personality and the way you deliver information. Just even calling up the next act. Even just that. But this is how people keep on calling you to do these little things. But
I just so people know, I do this for free because I can't charge because of my position. So I do it because I'm giving back to the community. So I support all these colleges that I didn't attend and high schools that I didn't attend because I'm trying to give back, because I want to make a difference. I want my life to be what Miss May said it should be, doing all the good you can to all the people you can for as long as you can.
You know what? I say big ups and much honor and respect to those that have helped to mold you. You mentioned your aunt yesterday as you delivered your message, that she asked for two things as she was checking out.
Aunt Joyce Williams, who, God rest her soul, she passed away over this past week. And Aunt Joyce, who was always so effervescent and bubbly and full of joy and always pouring into people's lives positive things, she declined medical help at the end of her life. And she said just two things she wanted: some soursop juice and a mango. And she drank the soursop juice, had the mango, and then she passed on to be with Christ. She went to be with the Savior. And I
After
just thought that
she
that was just
burped.
so
After
fitting
she
for
burped.
someone who lived their life so positively to die doing the thing she wanted to do on her own terms, right? And God allowed her to be even able to do that at 93. 93.
That is how I want to check out. And when I hear you deliver, whether it is just a greeting or a whole message, it gives that kind of hope. When I read reviews of individuals who have been before you in a case, they leave with that kind of sense that there's more to this than what people say, what meets the eye, how it is believed. And I pray for more people like you. And if no more people like you come about, I pray for a longer life than is scripted for you, so that you can make this impact to create more.
Excellent.
So,
Praise God. I give the honor to God and to my wife who keeps me in line.
listen, people just need to see her sometimes. They would know.
The boss, the boss, the
The boss
boss.
herself. No man, you have a great night. Thank you again for
God
sharing your
bless you.
time with us.
Love you all. Love you, the Night Shift crew, and love you, Kevin, DJ Kevin Stew. You are awesome.
Much love, bro.
All
Take
right. Bye
care.
bye. God bless.
Until next
Bye.
time.
Okay.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the man himself, Judge Norman Hemming. We can leave off the judge. We can leave off the reverend because he is Norman Hemming, and those things that he does, those things that he will do, these are just jobs that he has taken on for whatever period of time. And that's who our leaders are. Our leaders are individuals first. And so, whereas we might see them in one type of light or another, they're all approachable. You just have to find a way to speak their language so that they can know that, hey, you know, maybe I should listen to you. Sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes you have to be more forceful. Or I should say more aggressive, but not disrespectful. And if we remember who it is that we are, just like what we heard all night, who we are, whose we are, then we're in a better place to let our voices be heard. And if we can come together like the gang that we are, the people with a common goal, going in the same direction, then we can get to where we're going. We can make the changes that we want to make. Let me check that. Make the changes that we need to make. 15 minutes to the top of the hour. We're going to be checking out here on the Night Shift with DJ Kevin Stew, Community and Finance Night, in just a few. But let me give you a little bit of musical therapy as we close out. And we kick it off with Nikki Blaze. The track is called Lost in Illusion. This is the sound of Al Third. As we close out this edition of Community and Finance right here on the Night Shift with DJ Kevin Stew. I wanna live it up too. And we can. I want to say thank you to all my affiliates, One Harmony Radio over there in the UK, NIE Radio in New Jersey, Island Worldwide, New York, the Foundation Radio Network, ClintonLindsay.com, right here in South Florida. Of course, those who are locked in on KevinStew.com. It was always a pleasure. I can't do it without you. And you have my word, I wouldn't even try. As we go about trying to live it up, remember to look out for members of your community. Your community is not just a development that you live in, but it spreads far and wide. Those that you pass on the bus, the plane, the boat, or the train, whether you walk, ride, or drive, these are members of your community. Do something good for one of them today, because you never know it's going to do something good for you tomorrow. My name is Kevin Stew. So all I like to do is to you, for you, and with you. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays right here, kevinstew.com. The Night Shift to DJ Kevin Stew. Good morning, good afternoon, good day to you wherever you are in the world, from right here in South Florida. I bid you all a good night. Be good. If you can't be good at it. Take care until.
Greetings.
Greetings and salutations, one and all. You're invited to tune in to the Night Shift with DJ Kevin Stew. It airs on Mondays with Community and Finance, Tuesdays with Healthy Love, and Wednesdays with Real Talk from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. Come spend some time interacting in the stew pot where we keep things bubbling and wind down in musical therapy. The Night Shift with DJ Kevin Stew is on kevinstew.com, where you're encouraged to have acceptance through enlightenment.